Hi, I'm Greg Lebovitz. I'm a Nokia developer champion with a specialty in Qt and Qt Quick, and I work for Integrated Computer Solutions out of Bedford, Massachusetts. And we're going to talk about moving your Qt or Qt Quick application to Silverlight or XNA. So in this presentation, we're going to talk about the frameworks that are available on Windows Phone and the challenges that exist in moving applications from the Qt environment to the frameworks on the Windows Phone. Then we'll talk about the steps to recoding an application from the Qt environment in C++ or Qt Quick in JavaScript to either Silverlight or to XNA. We'll also talk about the steps necessary to move the signals and slots from the JavaScript and C++ world to custom events in the C# world. And we'll talk about an example application in Silverlight, cover recoding a simple QML game into XNA using the graphics features of both environments. And that game will have animated characters and use input and output and drawing and animation. And we'll talk about how that all comes together in moving from Qt to XNA. So the two frameworks that are available in Windows Phone 7 is Silverlight and XNA. Silverlight is for data-driven applications or social media or applications that are going to do multimedia such as video or audio, retail applications, any application that's going to be heavy on controls or use embedded objects such as web browsers or mapping or any of the other capabilities that are available through XAML. And code behind in C#. XNA is a graphical environment that has support for variable or fixed frame animation, and it lends itself very nicely to games or to highly graphical applications or just interactive applications that are entertaining and fun and make use of motion and graphical items that are animated. So the challenges in moving from Qt to Silverlight is that because we're using different languages and we're using different declarative specifications, we're not going to be able to reuse actual code, though in some cases we're going to be able to recode the functionality or make simple translations from C++, for instance, to C#, and capture at least the algorithms and the structure of the code. We don't have signals and slots in the Silverlight environment, and we have different tools, different user experience models, so we're going to need to understand the style and the user experience guide for Windows Phone in order to understand how to capture the flow of the application that is coming from the Qt world, maybe on Symbian or Mego, and move that into the style guide, if you will, for Silverlight on Windows Phone. And finally, we're going to have a different model for things like the flow of pages and the mechanisms that we use for moving back and popping up the page stack. We will be able to reuse the design of existing screens wherever possible, but we're going to have to map those screens from the QML environment on the Symbian or Mego phone into XAML, and we're either going to do that by using the designer tools or by doing a hand-implemented translation of one environment to the next. But we will have very similar capabilities. So, for instance, both environments will have pages and page designs and page flows, and they will have common controls and navigation that will be similar between the two platforms. And so we'll be able to at least map between the capabilities and functionality between the two environments. So we're going to have some kind of code reuse as we move code from the JavaScript or C++ world into C Sharp, in that the structure of the code, the methods, the control flow within those methods will be very similar or the same. We're just going to have to recode them into the different language. So in C++, it's very easy to directly map methods and algorithms into C Sharp, but the challenge is going to be finding compatible objects or framework methods that allow us to perform cute functionality in Silverlight and C Sharp using the available .NET or other APIs that are available on the phone. So the steps to recoding an application from the Qt world into Silverlight are pretty straightforward. And we're going to take a very top-down approach. The first thing we're going to do is look through the screens and capture their designs and capture their flows. And we can do this in one of two ways. We can actually run the application and generate wireframes from the application and on paper map out the flows, or we can look at the QML or Qt code and extract the structure by doing a one-to-one mapping between a QML page and a XAML file. And doing so, we'll be able to capture the structure within the two frameworks and make the movement of objects from one framework to the other more straightforward. I tend to use the latter by looking at the structure of the code and capturing as much of it as possible in XAML to at least get the declarative part laid out, and then later on go back and extract the actual code segments and apply that to the code behind in this C-sharp file. If I'm using Qt components, this becomes really easy because there's almost a one-to-one correspondence between the Qt Quick components that are available on Symbian or on the Migo phone and the objects that are available in the extended components and tools that are available with the Mango phone release. So there's in QML, in Qt Quick components, we'll have button sliders and edit boxes and spin boxes, and we'll find very similar controls in the extended set of controls Windows Phone Mango environment, and so the mapping's pretty easy. For apps that are hand developed using a custom page model that isn't making use of the Qt Quick Components page stack, we're going to have to extract that flow and map that into the page model and navigation model that's available in Silverlight. That's usually trying to capture, either by running the application, the flow, or by, again, going to wireframes and writing down what page appears when I do what in the application. Once we do that, we can determine the states that are associated in QML with each of the QML elements, and we'll try and map that into either properties or actual C-sharp code that will implement the multiple states that QML actually supports as part of the core language. And once we do that, we'll have the pages, we'll have a logic or flow map of the pages as they move from screen to screen, and we'll understand the controls that trigger those changes, and we'll be able to map what's available in the Qt environment for instance, going back a page into the back button, hard back button on the Windows phone. And we have to bear in mind that in order to meet the style guide requirements, we'll have to make use of the standard controls and standard hardware buttons that are available on the Windows phone. So once we understand the overall structure of the application, then we're going to try and do the one-to-one mapping between the controls that are available being used in the Qt application or the Qt Quick application and what's available in XML, in XAML. We can also look at the signals and slot relationships between the controls and connected objects or between the controls, and we can either use XAML dynamic bindings or we can implement the slot-like functionality in the code behind. In the places where we don't have similar functionality, for instance, from the core elements that are available in XAML, and map that to, for instance, signals that might be available from QML or from Qt, then we're going to have to develop and write custom events and emit those or throw those when we get the appropriate input from the control available under Silverlight. Then we can redesign the pages so that they fit the flow of the the style of XAML. For instance, once we've mapped the pages from one into the other, we might want to change some of the items that we use for the flow of data. So we might take a number of pages that are available under the QML application and merge them together into a panorama under Silverlight. And there may be some restructuring that has to be done in order to take advantage of the Windows Phone look and feel. That's a little bit hard, and you need because you need to understand the Windows Phone style guide beforehand. So it might be worth the effort to get familiar with all of these navigation models that are available in Windows Phone before you start the porting effort. In some of the more complex flows, you might not have a direct mapping between what's available on Windows Phone, and you may have to do some custom navigation and add additional controls. Bear in mind that the Windows Phone model has the display page and the standard buttons at the bottom with the menu available through the ellipse. So any menu items or any toolbar items that you're creating in Qt Quick or Qt will probably want to map into that toolbar area at the bottom of the screen so that you meet the standard Windows Phone application model. Then finally, it's going to be important to find parallels between the APIs that are available under Qt and Qt Mobility and what's available from Windows Phone 7. Though that's outside of the scope, there's some similar APIs that are well known and available. So for instance, OV maps that are available under Qt through the Mobility API would map into Bing Maps on Silverlight. WebKit and WebKit functionality, WebView or a QWebView under Qt would map into the web browser objects for using Internet Explorer. And then, of course, the device-level APIs from Mobility will have to map into the new Mango APIs for getting at the sensors or the camera or other devices that are available on the Windows Phone. So moving signals and slots is actually fairly straightforward. Typically, there's a signal that's very there's a custom of. All right, let me try that again. Moving signals and slots from the Qt application to an event in Windows Phone 7 is actually not as complicated as it may sound, because there's a similarity between the standard events that common elements and controls have and the signals that they emit in Qt. And we can usually do a one-to-one mapping between those. So for instance, if a slider emits a value change signal on Qt, or we're using its value binding property under QML, we're going to have a similar dynamic binding under XML for that value, or there might be an event emitted that we can take advantage of in C#. In some cases, we're not going to find an exact match, and we may, for simplicity of the port, we might want to create a custom event that maps to the signal and then build that event or emit that event based on some input that's coming from the custom controls, the standard controls, and turn that into a custom event signal, if you will. The slots are generally going to be handlers in C#, and we can do that mapping directly, whether the slot is implemented as JavaScript code or as C# code. One of the really nice features of C# is that it supports lambda expressions, which are kind of inherent in QML JavaScript bindings. So wherever you have, for instance, a signal in QML that maps into a JavaScript slot or JavaScript code, you can typically implement that as an event with a lambda expression in C#. And that makes translating the code or recoding much easier. To create a custom event in C# is very straightforward, almost is paralleling what's available in Qt for creating signals and slots. So if I want to emit a custom event, I'm going to first, inside of my class, declare an object or a type that is a delegate. And the delegate represents a signal handler class, if you will, that can be used to define an event of that type. So the delegate in C# is going to be very similar to the signature of a signal in Qt. And then we use that delegate or signature, if you will, to define a new custom event of that signature using the event keyword in C#. So once we have the delegate, which is the signature, and the event, the name of the event itself, then we can emit that event whenever we want to do the equivalent of emitting a signal. So in the example code here, we have some method that's called onSomethingHappened, and in that we're just going to call the custom event signal and emit that as if we were emitting a C++ or a QML signal. An example of creating a custom event is shown in the code below. C# has a mechanism for creating custom events that map very nicely into signals and slots. So to create a custom event, which would be the equivalent of a signal, we're going to use the delegate keyword, and we're going to declare, if you will, a signature for the event handler. And in this case, the signature is going to be a signal object handler, which will represent the delegate, and it's going to take a sender object and a set of event args. We then declare an event using that delegate, and we name that event, and that will be equivalent to declaring the signal. In this case, the signal's name or the event's name will be signal emitted, and we call it signal emitted to show the mapping between the two frameworks. Once we have the object declared, then somewhere inside of the signaling object, if you will, we're going to have a method where we will send that event by calling the event method. And we'll call that event and pass in the sender object and the data, which we're going to, in this case, get from the onSomethingHappened method. To use that signal, or to connect to that signal, if you will, or custom event, in our object that will contain the handler, we will reference the source object or the signal object, and we will create a new instance of it using new. We will then take that object and we will add our handler to the event property, if you will, in the same way that we would connect the signal in the slot. So here we're creating a new instance of a signal object handler object, and we're naming the handler that's going to be called, in this case, signal underscore handler. And we're adding that to the signal or the event that's going to be emitted from the source object or signal object. Once we do that, then any time the signal emitted event is sent or called from the signal object, our event handler, signal handler, will be called, and it will be passed in the parameters that we specified in the signal object delegate declaration. In this case, the sender object and the arguments that are associated with that object. So now that we understand how to map custom events into signals and slots, we can begin to do a page redesign. And in this case, we're going to show an example of doing a redesign of a simple Twitter application, and we're going to focus on the login page and maybe the page that tracks the tweets, and show what the end results will look like. So for the login page, we're going to find controls that match what we're doing in QML. In QML, we have a simple layout that is a column with a couple of rows, and in those rows we're going to put controls, and we're going to map those into stack layouts or grid layouts, and place the controls in the similar layout managers, if you will, in the two different frameworks. And then once we do that, then we will take the JavaScript code that is triggered by those controls, and we're going to recode those as code behind in C sharp. Then we'll do the same thing for the tweet page, but we're going to, in this case, recognize that our tweet list or our list of tweets are going to be using the model view from QML, and we're going to attempt to either use a list control with an enumerated type, or once we learn the mechanism, we can actually map that into a model view model specification and code behind, and use that view model with any of the views that are available in Silverlight to display that. So we could have a list, or if we have some sort of path object that we want to use, we can use that instead. So the login page on the in QML maps very nicely into the controls and such that we have available on the Windows phone. So we have edit boxes, and we have labels that we're going to use, and buttons that are very, very similar, though they're going to follow the Windows look and feel instead of the QML. Note that in the example we have here, I've also demonstrated how we actually use the translation feature that we talked about in the presentation on moving from QML to Silverlight using the available tools. We actually have Windows page translated into German. So if we use a QML list view and an underlying list model or XML model to get the data, then we can use a list view on Silverlight, and we can capture the data using a MVVM implementation and map that directly into the list view. And the only thing that we have left to do is to map the buttons that are on the bottom of the screen for QML using the either quick components or buttons of our own design, and map those into the standard buttons and menu items that are available using the Windows Phone model. For posting, we just add an edit object to the Windows Phone, and we update using the code behind. So how are we doing that? How are we doing the code behind to map from one environment to the other? Well, in QML, the code behind the tweet requests is using an XML HTTP request from JavaScript, and we're following the standard methodology of opening up the object and sending the request, and then waiting for the state to change responding to the code. The XML HTTP request can also be triggered by a signal, and in that signal we will implement the appropriate code. In XAML, we're going to do something very similar, but we're going to use an HTTP web request, and we're going to use an async request using a begin get response. So whereas in QML, we merely create the object and then build a call to a signal and put the JavaScript code behind it, in C Sharp, we're going to call the begin get response method that will start an asynchronous response and give us an iasync result, which will be passed into the response handler once the request completes. And we can specify what the response handler method is as a parameter to the begin get response method. So in this case, response is our handler and request is the actual object that contains that request, and then the handler will be able to respond to that and pull the request out of the asynchronous result passed in and then get at the response data. So the structure is very similar. It's just the actual methods that we use are slightly different, and that the asynchronous call in C-sharp is explicit versus the QML code, which implicit because we're using signals for the response. Once we do that, then what we'll do is we'll take all of the existing JavaScript code that we created to handle the requests for authentication, and we will map those directly into C#. So we're not going to get into the details of how we do that mapping, because that's beyond the scope of this discussion, but there's a one-to-one correspondence between each of the methods in JavaScript and the methods that are available that we're going to write in C#. Once we do that, then we complete the application. Once we complete the application, then we can bring all the code together in C# and bind it back to the objects that we defined using either XAML or the designer, and we'll have a working application. So how do we do a similar mapping of a QML application that is a casual game into XNA? To do so, we first have to compare the frameworks again between what's available in QML and what's available in XNA. So QML is an event-driven language All of the events are handled in the main event loop that are specified or called from the queue application viewer object. And if we want to get a timed application that has a variable or fixed frame rate, then we're going to use something like a timer object to signal events at a regular interval, and those events will be communicated to the application through that timer's signal. In XNA, we have a different mechanism in that the frame is automatically generated from the main loop. And in this case, XNA will call frames at either a variable or a fixed rate, and those frames will be handled through methods that are implicitly declared as virtual methods in the game object. So we either get variable rates by not specifying a frame interval for the application, or we will get frames at a fixed rate by giving the frame rate or frame rate property a fixed interval. Once we do that, then we need to implement the game object, that is the Microsoft XNA framework.game class, and that class will contain three main methods: a method to initialize the game and all of the properties, an update method that will be called at a regular frame rate to update or move the game pieces either continuously when we're doing variable frame rate or at a fixed frame rate if we specify an interval. Then once the update is done, a draw method will be done to display the changes in the game pieces or the changes in the game state onto the screen. Now, if we take too long to do the update and we schedule another update before the previous update completes, then we won't call the draw and we'll skip that frame. And this prevents the game from having a jerky behavior where we'll suddenly get a number of frames all at once. QML has a very similar functionality in its animation mechanism where overriding a previous frame will cause you to lose a frame, but you won't get that intermittent or jerky behavior. So within XNA, since we're going to perform updates at a regular frame interval, we're going to discourage as much as possible the use of events, and we're going to try and do everything synchronously through that update method. So the rules of thumb for converting the QML game to an XNA game is that we'll no longer need the timer object. So if you're using a timer object to drive the animation of the game or the overall state change of the game, you're going to just use the inherent frame rate of the XNA, and you're going to map whatever your timer interval was in QML to the standard XNA frame rate. And then for any object that is self-drawing in either QML or if you chose graphics view, we're going to re-implement the drawing of that object in its draw method. So for each object that we create in QML as a QML component, we're going to have a similar object in C# in the XNA framework. So for instance, if I have a game that has walls and obstacles, then for each obstacle I create in QML using a separate QML file, I'll have a similar obstacle as a CS file, C# file in XNA. And the way the game is going to be executed is that each game piece will be updated directly from the game object and will have a corresponding initialize, draw, and update method in each one of these objects. And as the frame method, the frame rate calls the update method, we will call each of the update methods of the individual objects that need to change, and then we'll draw them from the game objects draw method by calling each of the draw methods for each object. That way we can control how the game flow progresses by updating those objects explicitly ourselves from the logic of the inside the game object. This is very similar to what's going on with the graphics view animation in Qt, where every animation is implemented in two phases, where the first phase will be the calculating phase and the second phase will be the draw phase. Phase zero will be the equivalent of calling the update method in XNA, and phase two will be the equivalent of calling the draw method. And of course, the graphics view animation works almost identically to XNA in that if you overrun frames, then frames will be lost, but you won't get a pileup of frames that happen all at once. Once we do that, then, and we define the game object and all the individual objects for each game piece, then we define the logic ourselves in the game object. So in our game, all game objects will be rendered on the screen as sprites. So we will pass the sprite object from the game object down to each of the individual game pieces, and the game pieces will draw themselves using that sprite object. The pieces will have textures and they'll have images. Textures will give us those objects that are self-drawn using drawing methods, and the images will be used to read the information from, for instance, a PNG file and then render it onto the screen. All the game pieces in the game object are going to be kept in some sort of container so that we can run through them and update them as the update method is called. And we'll have to implement our own methods for doing collision detection, mainly because XNA is going to provide collision for rectangles, and our game pieces may have shapes to them that we want to detect the collisions. So we might use the XNA rectangle collision as a first level detection of collision, and then if we have a collision at the rectangle level, we may want to test the shapes and see if the shapes themselves are colliding, and this would be an optimization. In the same way as we are using the game object to control the update and the drawing of each of the game pieces, we're going to use the update method to process the input synchronously. And for any input that we get that's associated with a game piece, we're going to pass that input into an input method in each one of the game pieces. So for instance, if we have an arrow object that represents a button that allows us to move with the game, then we will declare the input for or test for the input for those buttons in the game object itself. And if we detect that the button has been pushed, then we will pass the event for that to the appropriate object, which would be the game piece that is responding to user input. So an example of that is a game that we have online, both as a QML application and a XNA application, that is called the Kalibok game. And Kalibok is a simple side-scrolling game, and side-scrolling games are games where you're looking at the game board from the side and you're watching the piece move along the length of the screen. So in our game, we're going to allow the game piece to move in two directions. So it can either roll forward or roll backwards, or it can bounce up and down. The game is called Kalibok because it was written based on a Russian child's story where grandma is making a ball of dough called a Kalibok that she's going to bake into a bread, but the Kalibok comes to life and it escapes and it goes rolling through the countryside, banging into obstacles and causing havoc. our game is going to use a smiley face to represent the Kalibok doe, and the Kalibok is going to either move horizontally left or right, or it's going to move up and down by having an up arrow key that will cause it to bounce. Because it can move vertically, we're going to introduce multiple levels, and we will have platforms where the Kalibok can actually land at the different levels and then navigate obstacles. And in our case, the obstacles for the Kalibok are going to be brick walls, and because we're silly, we're going to introduce cacti, even though they're not found in Russia. We'll translate the game into Arizona, and we'll have cacti. And anytime the Kalibok hits a cacti, then it's going cactus, then it's going to be pricked, and it's going to lose some of its health points. And the goal of the game will be to keep the Kalibok healthy as it moves through the game board. So we'll have to define the pieces. So we'll have to define the Kalibok, which is really going to take the main input from the user, because we're going to be moving that piece with the arrow keys. And then we're going to define some obstacles that are going to be the wall, the cactus, and to be fun, we'll introduce fire. And fire is not going to stop the Kalibok, but as the Kalibok passes through the fire, it's going to slow down and it's going to lose health points. And to make the game interesting, we're actually going to animate the fire. So the fire won't be a fixed image on the screen, but we'll have an animation that make it look like it's burning. And then our collision detection that we'll use from XNA will be to detect the collision between the Kalibok and any of the obstacles. And we'll do that by remembering where the obstacles are on the screen and testing their location or rectangle against the rectangle of the Kalibok, and then compare shapes so that we can do a better resolution of making sure that the object really did bounce off the wall. So this is what it looks like when we play the game. The Kalibok is the smiley face. The buttons are soft images that are on the foreground of the screen, and the platforms, if you will, are also the brick wall obstacles. So we can either bounce against a brick wall, or we can use the up button to land on top of it. And here we see that we have cactus. And right next to the Kalibok is a fire, and if we were actually running the game, that fire would be animated and would look like it's burning. So using the ideas that we introduced in the previous slides, we're going to build the game board for the Kalibok, and we're going to make the game dynamic so that each one of those levels are going to have a checkerboard, if you will, and we'll break the screen into boxes, and we'll place obstacles in any of the boxes, either in the X or Y direction. And we're going to read the obstacles from an XML file so that we can have different versions of the game. And we can have the simple version, and then we can have the more complex version as the user makes it through the obstacle course with good health. So we're going to create the game board first and then give it a background image. Then we're going to create something that's going to hold all the game pieces. And we're going to have images representing each one of the objects, the obstacles, and the mouse buttons. And in QML, that's going to be represented by an image QML element that represents the background, and in that element we're going to place another item that's going to be, we're going to call the scene, and the scene is merely going to be a container for other items that are the obstacles and the Kalibok. And then we will layer on top of that another image that contains the buttons, and for each one of the buttons we'll introduce an input element by having a mouse area, and then we'll respond to the signals when we press the button within that mouse area, and those events will flow into the game. This is what it looks like in QML, and you can see we have the top level item with the image, that's the background, and the item that holds all of the objects that we call the scene. For X and A, we're going to have a similar game board, but our game board is going to have the three methods that we talked about, the initialize method, and then the update method, and the draw method. And the initialize method is going to initialize all of the game board components, so it's going to set the background. It's going to set its size and its rectangle from that size, and then it's going to create all the game objects. The callabock in QML is going to be represented by an ellipse, and in reality, there's no ellipse object in QML, so we're either going to implement that in C++ and draw an ellipse, or we could use a rectangle and give it a radius, which would have the same effect. In this case, we're going to create the ellipse in C++, and we're going to bind it upward. We're not going to talk about how we do that, because we should have an understanding of that. But we're going to map this ellipse QML object into a class in C# that will perform the same functionality. And then for the movement in QML, we're going to have a doMovement JavaScript method that will be called from the mouse areas every time we receive an input. So in C#, we're going to have a corresponding callabock character. And to follow our structure that we talked about before, the callabock is going to be implemented as a C# file with three main methods. The initialize method that will initialize callabock to its first state, then an update method that will be called by the game board every time it receives an input from one of the buttons, and then a draw method once the update completes. And the purpose of the draw will be to render all of the image of the callabock in its different orientation as it rolls around the screen. So the draw method for the callabock is going to be fairly straightforward. And what we're going to do is set up a rotation angle and a position for the callabock as it moves through the game board, driven by the input from the game board. And the game board will update the important location and orientation of the callabock, and we'll merely render that onto the screen as a sprite batch using its draw method. And we'll do that in the callabock's draw method called directly from the game board piece. And then we're going to take the JavaScript doMovement method, and we're going to implement that in C#. And for the most part, the structure of the C# application is going to almost directly mirror what we were doing in JavaScript, but it's going to be called from methods inside the callabock that are triggered from input in the game board itself. So the game board will detect the input. It will call input methods within the callabock object, which will just merely update these positional and rotational parameters, and we will call the doMovement method that will actually place the callabock in the right position, and then we'll use those parameters in the draw method to render the callabock. So the only thing that's really left to do once we understand how to build the different game pieces and place them on the board is to animate the fire. And in QML, that's fairly simple. We'll have four states. Each state will represent a different frame of the fire. And as we move from state to state, we will change the image of the fire and we'll trigger the state change from a clock. We might also have a multi-dimensional fire where we might have two timers, and one that's going to change the opacity of the fire image so that we get sort of a brightening and darkening of the flame, but we don't have to do that to get the full animation effect. In C# and XNA, we're going to have the four fire images, and we're merely going to off the clock in each cycle for the fire object. We're going to increment to the next image and then in the draw method will render that particular image on the screen. So we just have to keep a list or array or other indexable container of the four images, and then change the animation as we go. So in QML, it's fairly straightforward. We have the four images, and we pick which image is visible based on the current state of the top-level item, fire item. In XNA, we're just going to have a loop. We're going to look at the time, and every so many seconds, we're going to increment a frame variable. And if the frame variable reaches the end, we're going to set it back to zero, so we get a loop. And then in the draw method, we're merely going to render the current item indexed off of the array of textures and sprite batch that using the draw method to the screen. So in summary, we talked about the different frameworks that are available and how we might use them, and some of the challenges that we'll face in coding these. And we discussed some of the steps to recoding a Silverlight application, how we might map signals and slots into events and custom events. We talked about a very simple example of a Silverlight application, just to get the gist of what the application would look like in from a user's perspective in QML and then Silverlight. And then finally, we actually went through the steps of how we would move a game from QML to XNA and add the animation and movement of the main character and update the game pieces and then actually animate one of the obstacles so that we bring it to life and make the game more fun. So thank you for your time and good coding.